29 minutes to 9 o'clock, listening to Tonight with me, Les Tekiva. Thanks so much for joining us this week. The International Network on Hepatitis in Substance Users Conference is currently taking place in Cape Town, and with the aim of discussing and lobbying for policies to eliminate hepatitis C and HIV in people who use drugs in Africa. But that's not necessarily the focus of the interview that we want to have here tonight. I want to talk about patient-centered approach to people who use drugs. Dr. Andrew Scheib from he's a strategic advisor at TB HIV Care, as well as a conference attendee, Kaketso, joins us on the line now. Dr. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And Kaketso, thanks so much for you for also coming on air with us this evening. You are a person who identifies as someone who uses or is dependent on drugs.
Yes, yes. I'm someone who for most part of my life, I was using drugs until I got help, until I started to know about harm reduction. Then I started using also OST, and now I'm also on treatment for hepatitis.
Okay, so before we get into your story, I want to start with Dr. Scheib. Before we begin, Doctor, could you please just briefly explain to us the purpose of the International Network on Hepatitis in Substance Users? It's a very big, long title for a conference, but essentially it's looking at mitigating, you know, the prevalence of hepatitis C and HIV in people, in particularly people who are drug dependent and people who inject drugs.
Yeah, that's correct. So it's the network has been established for over a decade, and it's the first time that they've done a focal conference in Africa. So what the conference has done is brought together people from over 8 African countries together to talk about experiences and challenges and successes of providing evidence-based services for people who use drugs, including opioid substitution therapy, needle and syringe programs, integrated into a service that also includes hepatitis testing and treatment. Because for a long time, the needs affecting people who use drugs have really been not on the political agenda and haven't been of much importance. And what this conference is doing is highlighting how countries like Kenya and Mauritius have really been at the forefront of leading this work, and how in South Africa we can really learn from what's happening in East Africa.
Hepatitis is essentially being described as somewhat of a silent killer, even those who have or have not used drugs, because often people with hepatitis don't even know that they are infected until it's too late. Is that not so?
So, yes, viral hepatitis, there are 5 different viruses, and virus hepatitis C is one of them, and it's spread through blood. So a long time ago, before we screened for blood products, people could get it from blood transfusions or unsafe medical practices. But in South Africa at the moment, since blood has been screened since the late 90s, it's often people who don't have access to sterile injecting equipment who are at risk. And once you become infected, it's a chronic condition for many people, and it's asymptomatic, like HIV can be. So even though you have the infection, it's focused on your liver, but for many, many years, it doesn't cause any symptoms. And by the time the liver is chronically infected, there's the development of cirrhosis, which is scarring, and some people develop liver cancer. And by the time people recognize that they have symptoms, the disease is quite progressive. But the incredible thing is we now have a cure for hepatitis C, and those are medications called direct-acting antivirals, which is what Kaketso was speaking about earlier, that he's part of a treatment program to cure viral hepatitis C, which is one of the most significant advances in modern medicine.
Well, we talk about the how essentially hepatitis as somewhat being overlooked from a policy level. Yes, HIV, other sexually transmitted infections have been at the forefront of our policy and also the literature and education. But what is being done from a governmental policy perspective to highlight the infections, particularly of hepatitis?
So within South Africa, the country has committed to, as long as other member states in the world, to eliminate viral hepatitis as a public health threat by 2030. So that's important that the government is committed to do this. And the government has also, through the National Department of Health, developed viral hepatitis treatment guidelines. It also includes prevention and care and support, and has developed an action plan. What the government is still in the process of doing is mobilizing the funds to finance that. And for hepatitis C specifically, is still waiting on the registration of direct-acting antivirals, which the dossiers were submitted several years ago to the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, and we're still waiting for approval.
Also joining us on the line is chairperson and founder of the SA Drug and founder of SA Drug Policy Week, Sean Shelley. Sean, thanks so much for coming on air with us. You don't have to walk far, particularly in the Cape Town CBD, to see the effects of people, particularly injecting drugs. You also probably don't have to walk far with even seeing people in inject drugs. How would you describe this? Is this an epidemic? Is this a scourge? Or is this a social problem? Or an effect of a social structure where we see people dependent on drugs? And I understand you are very loath to use the word drug addict.
Yes. You know, because it comes with a lot of definitions which aren't really very helpful. It's really stigmatizing the language. I know a lot of people might self-identify as addicted, but we can get addicted to anything. People get addicted to, you know, bad relationships. They get addicted to bad habits, you know, or whatever it is, you know, sex, gambling. And we tend to look at it only as drugs, and we tend to look at people who have dependent drug use or drug use without much conscious thinking about it as some sort of evil scourge, which really, that's not the case in the vast majority of cases. What we're seeing is the symptom of basically a society that doesn't have space for a lot of people and that doesn't hold much hope for a lot of people.
Sean, you've dedicated a lot of your time understanding drug use, the rights of people who use drugs. You say yourself I don't know, would you describe yourself as a drug user or as a former drug user in terms of the terminology? If you go to for example, an AA meeting, people don't say, I'm a former alcoholic, I am still an alcoholic. Firstly, how do you navigate that descriptor of oneself? How do you identify?
So I identify as somebody who uses drugs, and that could mean a lot of things, though. So, you know, somebody who is dependent on a pharmaceutical drug, are taking a pharmaceutical drug in the same way often, and not all the time, but in the same way that a lot of people will access a street drug, in particular the same type of street drug all the time, to address a condition that they can't get help for. You know, you really look at something like methamphetamine is not that different to the drugs we use to treat adult ADHD. We look at, you know, somebody living on the street where they're suffering a lot of pain, they've got infections, they're hungry all the time. Heroin is a fantastic drug for alleviating a lot of that pain. Obviously, it's cut with a lot of impurities, and so the real problem is the way it's being used, where it's being used, and how it's given added meaning because of a person's circumstances. So I would identify as somebody who uses drugs. I think that's a fluid position for a lot of people. Somebody who drinks alcohol would be a person who uses drugs, that's for sure. You know.
So you spent a lot of time understanding drug use, the rights of people who use drugs, and also the development of policy. What has your research revealed? I want to start from a user perspective. Do we know why? Is there literature? Is there an understanding to why people become dependent on drugs? Is it environment? Is it genetic? Is it the neurological process that is added to when people then use drugs? Do we actually know?
So neurologically, there are changes in the brain when people use drugs, but there are changes in the brain when people read a lot or fall in love or develop any sort of habit. In fact, it's neurobiologically, it's very close to a romantic relationship. And if you think about it, in early stages of romantic relationships, people spend undue amount of time with the loved person. They fail to see the negatives. those are fairly normal kinds of things that happen. It's a learned behavior. But really what the reason why a lot of people find undue meaning in drugs is simply because there's very little else to find meaning in. And that's not everybody, but with a lot of people, that's the case. You know, some people will start off just enjoying the drug. It serves a purpose. Whenever somebody uses a drug, it serves some kind of purpose in their life, even though it might be killing them. And when you're living in very unstable circumstances, you're not that concerned about the problems that are going to arise 6 months from now. Right now, you're suffering, you're going through withdrawal symptoms, you want to feel warm, you want to feel as if the world's an okay place. So you would take your dose of heroin or whatever it is. And if we all had migraines every single day and there was a tablet to take it away, we knew it would take it away, but it was going to kill us in 3 years, we would occasionally take the tablet. Most people would. But you've got the dependence, you've got the stigmatization, and people want to feel like they belong. And when you belong to a group, even a group that is so thoroughly marginalized, you're still belonging to something. And there's a lot of meaning that comes with drug use. It's not a simple thing. We can't just say, oh, that person's addicted, or, oh, it's only this thing that causes it. It's a number of things, but the commonalities we start to see is as we move towards more at the states of psychosocial dislocation, when people lack hope, some of them, not all of them, some of them will find undue meaning in drugs. And then when we put them into jail, they've got no economic future, and so they're kind of caught in this trap very often, and we create the problem often.
I want to bring Kuketso into this conversation. He is also someone who identifies as being a person who uses drugs. Kuketso, you briefly went into your background, but tell me, when did experimentation, when did drug use for you, particularly injecting drugs, start for you?
When did it start?
Yes.
Before I injected, I used to smoke heroin. But because of I didn't feel the high, I didn't feel it, I started injecting in 2013. In 2013, I started injecting, and I injected all the way till 2017. That's when I switched, just like Sean Shelley said, I'm still on another substance at the moment. I'm on OST, I'm taking methadone now.
So you essentially went on drug replacement therapy, drug substitution therapy, to try and wean you off that heroin. What was that experience like?
I could say the OST really helped a lot. The methadone helped a lot with the withdrawal symptoms, because I think without the medication, I wouldn't have made it. It really helped a lot with the withdrawal, because when we were on OST, I was able to function normally. I was able to feel normal. I was able to function normally.
And where were you using drugs, Kuketso? I regularly walk around the city. I've spoken to people. I've interacted with people here on the street. Many people who I've spoken to saying that they've moved to the Cape Town CBD area and around, you know, the city ball, because of the pressures at home, and that they were either kicked out or they were looking for a means to afford the drugs that they use, and that is why they've then moved to the city center. What is your story?
I can relate to them also. Me, I come from Pretoria. I had left home also. I was staying in the CBD of Pretoria. In the street, I was also homeless when I was using, because of the economic situation at home and also the pressures at home. In the street, it's much better for me to afford my habit, because I could hustle my next fix in the street, you see.
Sean, just bringing you into this conversation again. I've been fortunate enough to travel to a few countries, and I've last year I was in Vancouver in Canada, who has also has its own issues with heroin and people injecting drugs. They've gone on an approach of decriminalizing, offering services, offering drug substitution clinics, offering social housing if you can show that you've attended drug substitution clinics, if you regularly replace the needles that you use, and that you show that you've taken some responsibility. But what struck me, and maybe it was just my sensibilities, but seeing someone inject, even if I see it here in the CBD, but it's always an arm's length away. But being in a place like Canada in Vancouver and walking down the street and someone is literally just leaning against the shop front, you know, of on the main street, injecting, it really was jarring to my, call it middle-class sensibilities of someone shooting up right here in front of me. And it's not as if I wanted to say, you know, man, there's an alley right here. I'm not saying hide away, but don't you want some privacy as well?
So first of all, if it's affecting your sensibilities, which it would, and it would affect mine as well, how much is it affecting their sensibilities? Or how much have they got to a stage where actually they're so desperate they don't care? But then, of course, you've got another aspect of it, which is there's a lot of fentanyl in Canada and that. And so you don't want to be in a dark alley, because if you overdose, you're going to die. And most of these people do not want to die. They take a lot of precautions not to overdose and die, you know, carrying naloxone with them, that kind of thing. So you want to kind of be a little bit in the public space and not as well. That's one side of it. But also for some people, they're just so desperate. You know, it's like nobody likes, and I've been homeless for part of my life, nobody likes to defecate in public. It's the most undignified thing you can do. But when there's no toilets, you're kind of going to do it. And it's the same kind of cycle, you know, where people just don't have any place to go. So in Vancouver, they've got Insight, which is one of the safe injecting facilities there, and people go in and they've never had an overdose in a safe injecting facility in the world, in fact, because you've got trained people there, and it helps develop a sense of community. And in the Netherlands, when I went to go and try and visit safe injecting sites, there's nobody injecting anymore. I came across one guy in his 50s who was still injecting, because nobody injected anymore. They kind of resolved a lot of those issues through a number of things that happened. There was also a large psychosocial component to that, in people from Sumatra don't accept injecting, and they, a lot of them were in amongst the injecting users. And in Switzerland as well, you no longer see the needle park kind of scenario, because Switzerland took a very pragmatic approach under Ruth Dreyfus when she was their president. They just prescribed diamorphine, which is essentially pharmaceutical heroin, to people, and people stopped having to panic to try and get it. They weren't worrying about the next dose all the time, and most of those people are now in aged care facilities or employed. And you know, same in the UK, the people that are fortunate enough to get diamorphine, most of them are employed. And so nobody likes to see people injecting in public. It's not a nice experience for the person or for you to witness that. We need to find something more creative to resolve these issues.
Some of the feedback coming through on our message sites here is basically of the tone of drug dealers and drug users should be jailed, should be prosecuted, and they should be in prison. Why is it a better idea to treat drug users as a social issue and not as a criminal justice issue?
Well, first of all, there was never any good that came out of putting somebody in jail for drug use. And most police people would agree with you as well, because it's a never-ending cycle. You put them in jail, you take away all economic opportunity from them, you then encourage them to join gangs, they end up joining the gangs, and that there's no good that ever came out of it. If somebody benefited out of going to jail, it was in spite of going to jail, not because of going to jail. So that just doesn't work. It hasn't stopped drug use anywhere in the world. It hasn't reduced drug use. Supply is higher than ever. Demand is higher than ever. So we've got to find something else. And the only other solution we have is actually to treat people like people. And we know from lots of studies that the only predictor of future contact with the criminal justice system between two adolescents using, say, cannabis is whether or not they get caught. So our interventions are doing far worse than doing nothing at all. Most people will resolve the issues.
Kuketsa, back to you. I want to know from you, have you had to rob, steal? Have you had to turn to crime to give you a financial position to afford your drugs?
For me, I was fortunate enough because when I was in the street, I was running my small business. Mm. But I have engaged in crime before. Mm. But mostly I was running my small business. Mm.
And what was that experience like? I want to understand the psychology of you using drugs, having to do various things that you normally wouldn't to get money to feed this urge to feed your dependence.
It felt like I had to do it, but afterwards I will regret what maybe I did during that time. Mm. But because of the situation, I had to do it. Mm. There was nothing else I could do because I had to feed the habit. And through me getting my next fix, it was my way of finding, of being normal. Mm. Because if I didn't smoke or if I didn't inject my drugs, I couldn't function. Mm. That's why it was a must.
Mm. Sean, I often relate the story because it's one of the most powerful stories that I have heard. I knew someone, and it's basically an issue of drug usage and class. And I knew someone who went into rehab for tuck methamphetamine. And he told me, you know, Lester, I'm looked down at because I use tuck, but I used to work for a company where my bosses, my rich bosses, I had to go out and get cocaine for them, which is this class A expensive drug. So the class dynamic, and he says that they were seen as normal people. They were seen as, you know, very busy, very active business people, and that was part of their scene. But because I was dependent on tuck, crystal methamphetamine, I was seen as a tuck monster, just something else. And that was a very, very important lesson for me.
Yep. So that's a really interesting observation, because the fact is that all street drugs have got a pharmaceutical analog. And so let's say, for example, somebody's got adult ADHD and you're privileged, you get diagnosed, you are able to access a psychiatrist, 900 to 1,100 grand. You get a diagnosis. Every single month you have to go to the doctor and you have to get your methylphenidate, or in the United States, Adderall, which is even closer to methamphetamine, but methylphenidate is a stimulant exactly the same. You're getting a known dose, known concentration. You take your dose, if short-acting, 3-4 times a day, and life goes on, right? But you can afford it. Now, let's say, for example, you discover that this drug actually helps you concentrate. It makes you feel better and all the rest, but you can't afford to go to the psychiatrist. You can't afford the medication itself, but as soon as you've got 30 rand, you can go and buy a straw of tuck and you can take it and you can feel like you can achieve anything. Mm. But you don't know how strong it is. You don't know how much methamphetamine you're getting. And imagine going into a bar and saying, I'm just having one drink, but you don't know whether the drink is methanol, ethanol, 100%, 3%, and it all tastes pretty much the same. It's really difficult to guarantee that you're never going to get drunk or you're going to be able to function properly the next day. And that's what happens when we get this. And there is a class aspect to it, absolutely. When you use cannabis behind your gated community walls, you are unlikely to get caught. Mm. And don't let people say, oh, well, people aren't getting arrested for cannabis anymore. They certainly are. But if you're in Tafelsig, and you happen to use cannabis, the chances are in the past you certainly have been arrested. Now you're also quite likely to be arrested, and that ruins the rest of your life. So there's definitely a class element to it, and these drugs have pharmaceutical analogs. They There's no predictable chemical cascade that happens just because you take a drug. It's about the drug, your mindset about it, and the setting in which you take it, which makes it helpful or not so helpful. But the majority of the time, it's pretty helpful to people who use drugs in that particular moment.
Kaketso, you are someone who says uses drugs. You're part of a drug substitute substitution therapy. You've injected drugs and talking about these issues of class and stigma and labels. How do you feel if someone calls you an addict or calls you a druggie? How does that make you feel?
You know, is words like that destroy? Words like that take us back. They make us feel worthless. They make us feel like I have no purpose. They make us feel like it means me and the drugs. We are brothers. It means me and
There's
the
another
drugs.
Word that is used in Joburg, Nyope boys.
Yeah, that's what they do. And words like that, they destroy us. Mm. They make us smoke more and more. They make us use them because of it's like what they're saying. It's like they're saying you and the drug. Yeah, you are a drug. It's like they're saying you are now, but you are a drug.
Wow. Sure.
And the data supports that contention. So we know that, for example, if you give people therapists a fictional recovery score, so that says that this person's going to do well and that person's not going to do well. What happens is that person who you say is going to do well does do well, and the other one that's not going to do well doesn't do well. Because what we say to people, the labels we give them, become self-fulfilling prophecies. Mm. And eventually people find belonging in that label. And, you know, the other thing is that I've seen people who've resolved a lot of their drug use issues, and they go back home, and they're still not welcome back home, and they're not welcome into the society. And it's actually, quite frankly, easier for them to accept I don't get accepted because I'm a junkie than it is that people just actually don't want me around. And it's tragic. I've seen it on a number of occasions. But obviously, that's not everybody's story. But to go to the crime thing, you know, the crime thing is not an inevitable link with drug use. A lot of the people I know, in fact, heroin users were called junkies because they used to recycle. That's where they got the name junkies from. And that was a very valuable activity, and still is a valuable activity. So people would choose to rather earn the money and that. And look, there are no heroin users out there who are dependent heroin users who are struggling on the street who are planning any massive crime wave. That I can assure you. Acquisition crime, sure, we see acquisition crime with it. Opportunistic acquisition crime in particular. But the majority of them wouldn't steal if, for example, they could access diamorphine, which is a very cheap drug to give people, and actually safer than methadone, believe it or not, and life would go on. But people somehow have this blockage in their head where they just cannot get their head around that, like alcohol, some drugs are a social lubricant to some people or allow them to live. We would rather have people die clean, in inverted commas, than live happy and use a drug that they don't approve of.
Sean Shelley, chairperson and founder of the South African Network of People Who Use Drugs, and also Kaketso on the line with us, a confessed drug user and a drug-dependent person. Thanks so much for coming on air with us. We really, really appreciate you sharing your thoughts and your experiences with us.